Hey, thanks for coming. Today we're going to talk about subsoil carbon and some mechanisms that influence its accumulation during reforestation. These are data that I generated as a PhD student with Dan Richter. And in addition to our moderator and conveners, I wanted to give some acknowledgments to some colleagues that have helped with these data. Some German folks from GFD, Friedhelm and Marcus, some folks at Duke University, Paul Heiner, Krista, Tai Chi, and West, as well as individuals at the International Soil Carbon Network who helped us with some of our radiocarbon work. And what's motivating, this is great to go after the folks that just went before me, so I don't have to spend a lot of time talking about what's motivating me here, but we've established now that subsoil carbon's big and it's important, and I'll just add a little something here that it's also really understudied. So this is a figure that Meg Mobley put together, and what she did is she just compiled these two global meta-analyses of land use change and its influence on subsoil carbon contents, and she took all of these studies and just asked a simple question: how deep do they sample, right? And when we think about land use change and subsoil carbon, land use change has huge economic, environmental impacts. It's one of the most intensively studied soil processes. And what we could see is that more than 90% of the studies in these big global meta-analyses sample no deeper than 30 centimeters. So there's a lot of opportunity to understand global carbon cycling by sending our investigations down into deeper soil layers, as we've all just talked about. In many subsoils, the carbon and iron cycles will couple in a redox cycle. And I want to point out that this coupled carbon-iron cycling has been pretty extensively studied in wetland soils, in their surface soils, where you can see Aurinchemis roots establish channels in an otherwise iron-depleted or glade matrix, and these Aurinchemis roots pump oxygen into the soil, which facilitates iron accumulation. So you get these redoxomorphic features from coupled carbon-iron cycling. But there's a really cool sort of inverse process that happens as well, and it's not as extensively studied. And this happens in subsoils. The subsoils don't necessarily have to be saturated all the time, right? Because you can have oxygen limitations below ground without saturation, especially at depth. And so what we see often in subsoils is a soil matrix that might be bright red and generally aerobic, and roots will grow into this matrix, and periodically when respiration outpaces oxygen diffusion from above, organic carbon from these roots is oxidized. And if oxygen's not around, iron will act as the terminal electron acceptor to that process. And what you see is you have ferric iron, which is pretty darn insoluble, is reduced because it accepts an electron, and it's reduced to ferrous iron, which is many orders of magnitude more soluble. And then the ferrous iron diffuses along oxygen gradients until it gets to better oxygenated soil environments and it reprecipitates. Right? And what I'm going to show you today is that this cycle, this coupled carbon-iron subsoil cycle, does a lot more than just redistribute soil iron. It actually leads to sort of a complete restructuring of the subsoil environment, which conditions spatially subsoils for interactions with above ground ecosystems and forests during land use change. We studied the cycle and the influence of reforestation in the Duke Forest. We dug six soil pits at three landscape positions: the shoulder, the foot slope, and the shoulder, the back slope, and the foot slope of a really gentle catena. And half the pits were established in a forested area, and the other half were established in a clearing for one of the oldest transmission lines in Durham County. So before 1911, the whole landscape here was cleared for agriculture, and the three soil pits that are now in the forest have undergone two rotations of pines, while under the transmission line, these pits have been maintained without deeply rooted forests, and they support grasses and forbs. Soils transition from ultisols at the shoulder down to alfasols at the foot slope. Here's an image of what we see when we dig these pits to about 2 meters. There's abundant and obvious redoxomorphic features. Up here in the B horizon, we've got what we're going to refer to as gley microsites. They appear gray. We also have iron-enriched microsites, which appear red. Deeper in the C horizons, we have gley microsites, which you can just see surrounding this root. We have iron-enriched microsites, and there's also a third redoxomorphic feature, which we're going to refer to as iron-depleted microsites, and those are appearing white. All right. And so to understand these processes, we did sample bulk soils in all these pits, but we also took the profile apart and sampled individual pedons and used a scalpel to really isolate these individual redoxomorphic features in all six soil pits. And we can really see the subsoil couple carbon iron cycle in action here. So I'm going to throw some figures at you. There's a lot of samples, a lot of horizons, different landscape positions, different land use treatments. But I'm going to explain this real quick. But we've got I'm going to throw these figures at you with different variables up top. And we've essentially collected four sample types from all these profiles: bulk soil, the gley microsites, the iron depleted microsites, and iron enriched. And so the data are separated that way. We also have the land use treatment, grass and forest, by the color of the bar at different subsoil horizons. And these data that I'm showing you are just from the shoulder. So one landscape position, two pits. All right. I'm going to keep a running tally here and this figure up as well, so you know exactly what we're talking about. But the first thing that we can see is across this catena, carbon concentration is significantly higher in gley microsites. Right. So subsoil carbon on a concentration basis is found in one redoxomorphic feature much higher concentrations than the others, right? And so as I throw more data at you, I'm gonna add more to this table. All right, so just remember that across this landscape, gley microsites is where carbon's in its highest concentration. Now from radiocarbon, we can also see, comparing these gley microsites to the same soil pits at the shoulder, estimates of delta 14C tell us that radiocarbon, it's enriched in radiocarbon and gley microsites relative to iron depleted and iron enriched microsites, right? And that tells us that carbon in these gley microsites exchanges with the atmosphere generally much more rapidly than other microsites, right? So we've got a more rapid carbon cycle as well. And what this leads to is a redistribution of subsoil iron oxides. So this is operationally defined crystalline iron oxides. And while carbon was cycling up here in the gley microsites rapidly, iron's accumulating in the iron-enriched microsites. So again, you've got periodic anaerobic conditions in these gley microsites, which are donating electrons that are accepted by iron oxides, and these iron oxides diffuse away from the site of organic matter reduction. All right? And we can confirm that this redistribution of iron in the existence of these microsites is from coupled carbon iron cycling and iron reduction from looking at the ratio of crystalline iron oxide concentration to the stable iron isotope ratio of the crystalline iron oxides. And we've got bulk soils here, which aren't that interesting. If you notice, I've just been ignoring bulk soil. But down here, we see an enrichment of isotopically light iron in the iron-enriched microsites. Right? So these soil volumes are high in iron, and it's isotopically light relative to the subsoil volumes, which are low in iron. And we know that the reductive dissolution of iron oxides preferentially mobilizes isotopically light iron. So again, this is just confirming that the shift not only to higher concentration in the iron-enriched microsites, it's also isotopically light, just really driving home the fact that iron reduction is causing this redistribution. But in addition to just the redistribution of iron, we see really steep textural gradients. So this is a little different figure. This is a single profile in percent clay. Bulk soil is here in brown. And then you have the clay microsites, the iron depleted microsites, and the iron enriched microsites. And what we see essentially is that in these soil volumes, where carbon cycles rapidly, these soil volumes are becoming finer textured as well, right? So it's not just this coupled carbon iron cycle isn't just redistributing iron, it's reorganizing the physical properties of these subsoil horizons. And we know that fluctuations in redox can influence soil particle size physically by dissolving iron oxides, which act as particle binding agents, but also chemically by influencing the proton budgets, which changes particle surface charges. And that's pretty well established. And I want to point out, too, these differences. You know, this is within a single horizon here, right? The same soil pit, two soil volumes that are a couple millimeters apart. These differences are huge. These are big textural differences. You know, the redistribution of iron across these microsites, the redistribution of soil texture across these microsites, within a single horizon, it actually rivals often what we see in ultisols of the southeast going from surficial A and E horizons to the B horizons. This is a major restructuring. And so, of course, then, too, I'm pointing out down here that along with this redistribution of clay, you get a redistribution of available nutrients. Did you stand up? Because that's my 2 minutes. Perfect. So let's talk about what happens during reforestation. Here's the deal. You can imagine the soils under the forest have significantly more roots at all landscape positions than they do under grass, right? And what we observe when we inventory these roots is 95% of these roots exist in the clay microsites, all right? But what's really interesting is that these roots grow into the clay microsites, and the clay microsites are the only subsoil volumes that have their carbon concentration and radiocarbon signature changed during reforestation, right? So essentially any changes to subsoil carbon cycling and any accumulation of subsoil carbon cycling when these subsoils are reoccupied by a deeply rooted forest occurs only in the clay microsites. And that occurs without any morphological changes to these redoxomorphic features. And so what that means is that across this landscape, these redoxomorphic features exist in the subsoil independently of contemporary land use. There's steep gradients in the subsoil formed by long histories of coupled carbon iron cycling. But now, contemporary land use change is impacting the subsoil carbon, cycle in very distinct soil volumes. And so we've shown that coupled carbon iron cycling does a lot more than just redistribute iron. It's a full reorganization of the subsoil environment. There's a lot of emphasis paid on iron oxides and their importance to subsoil carbon stabilization, but what we're showing is that in redox-active subsoils, the importance of iron oxides on carbon stabilization might be overemphasized, because what we found is that carbon accumulation only happens in subsoil volumes where iron oxides are constantly being reduced and destroyed. Thanks.